Hey there. You know, if you're a frequent listener to our show, you already know that our show is brought to you by our friends over at Artillery Sports. But what you may not know is that Artillery Sports helps athletes of all types win on and off the course and court. They do this by selling quality, durable, and precision manufactured sports equipment that keeps you in the game, while also using a portion of the profits to provide the funding needed to care for our nation's veterans. With Artillery Sports, it's more than just a game. So head over to artillerysports.com today to buy the quality equipment you need to keep you in the game and to help our nation's veterans at the same time. That's artillerysports.com. Make sure you head on over there today. Oh, and use the code DOCFIRST to get 10% off your first order. Welcome to Documentary First, an inside look into documentary filmmaking. I am your host, Christian Taylor, and a documentary filmmaker myself. In today's episode, we're diving into the world of film scoring with a highly talented and accomplished composer. It's been a little while since we've explored the joys and the challenges of scoring a film, so I'm really excited to dive back in and see what we can learn from today's guest. Now, we're fortunate to have with us today a composer whose work has truly made an impact in the world of film, Panu. Let's see if I can say his name. Alto? No. Help me say it.
It's Panu Aaltio.
Panu Aaltio. Yes. Oh, I love it. He's from Finland, and so we're going to have fun with all of these names. So he has an impressive portfolio that includes everything from nature documentaries to gripping thrillers. Panu has made a name for himself in the industry, really, most recently with his film score for Little Siberia, which was picked up by Netflix and has been getting attention for its unique sound for sure and emotional depth. I can't wait to hear more about this creative process and his journey. Panu, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yes, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate your finished lessons already in learning how to say your name. I am about to give your bio, and so you're going to have to help me again. I told him he's going to have to feel free to jump in here. I've already forgotten the lesson. So we're about to read this with some fun Finnish words. So Panu, I'm going to say your name one more time. So it's Panu Aaltio.
Yep.
Did I get it? Okay. Panu Aaltio is a Finnish film composer based in Helsinki and Los Angeles, born in, say it for me.
Nurmijärvi.
Nurmijärvi, Finland. Did I do it?
Yeah, that's great.
In 1982, he began studying the cello at age 6. He later studied music technology at the Sibelius Academy in Helsinki and film scoring at the University of Southern California, where he received the Harry Warren Scholarship for Excellence in Film Scoring. Aaltio has composed music for over 30 feature films, multiple TV series and video games, as well as a full-length ballet for the Finnish National Opera. His notable works include the Tale of Nature documentary trilogy, Tale of a Forest, Tale of a Lake, and Tale of the Sleeping Giants, for which he received the International Film Music Critics Association Award for Best Documentary Score for each film. Tale of a Lake also earned him Finland's, let's see if I can say it, UC?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
UC Award for Best Music in 2025. Aaltio composed the score for Little Siberia, a Finnish crime comedy thriller directed by, now this is a tough one, Domi Karkoski.
Yeah, almost Domi Karkoski.
Ha, Domi Karkoski. Say it one more time.
Domi Karkoski.
Domi Karkoski. Oh, that sounds so beautiful. And based on, here's another one,
Antti Tuomainen.
Antti Tuomainen's novel. And the film was released as a Netflix original. And you can learn more about his work at panualtio.com. How'd I do?
Yeah, that was great. Thanks.
I still need a lot more Finnish lessons, I think. But that's a good beginning.
Yeah. Definitely.
Your language is absolutely beautiful.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to hear that.
So when did you learn English?
I'm pretty young because I wanted to play video games and they were all in English. So I just had to, and you still had those sort of early like adventure games where you need to like type in the command. So you actually need to know words. So I had a dictionary next to me, and because it was still like a paper dictionary, I didn't want to find the same word many times. So you actually learned pretty quickly to remember the names, and then I kind of just emulated the pronunciation from what I heard on TV.
Wow, that's fascinating. So what were your favorite video games? What were the first ones that you were playing?
Well, I definitely remember playing like the Sierra adventure games. Like there's like Space Quest and all these kinds of games. And also like LucasArts, the adventure games were always my favorites. And there's like the Monkey Islands and like... a lot of them, and but there's I think my favorite game of all time is like Ultima 7. So I also like these sort of computer role-playing games, so that was my childhood. A lot of video games, a lot of films as well, but I think most video games was probably the most that I did.
Do you think video games, the music in video games inspired you to, you know, into the love of composing?
I'm sure, because they had some really, really nice scores, especially like the adventure games. They had some really, really well done music and sort of very interesting, also sort of interactive music. So it was like there was a lot to love there, and so yeah, for sure, video games as well. But it's still like, I'm sure film is like the source of my biggest inspiration for music, because it's sort of like. That's where, you know, that's John Williams and all that stuff. So it I had to put that first, but definitely the video games are up there. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you ever heard of the game WildStar, but have you ever heard of that?
I'm not sure.
Well, I have the composer for my film, The Girl Who Wore Freedom, is Jeff Kurtennacker, and he is a video game composer, and he's been doing that for a very long time, and he wanted to make this jump over into filmmaking himself. So you should take a listen to The Girl Who Wore Freedom score, because I'm incredibly proud of it. Jeff is an incredible composer. Yeah, you guys need to have a conversation for sure, because he the same. He loved video games, and so he's doing a lot of video game composing, but also film scoring. So he would love to meet you, I'm sure. Now, when you I read that you started playing the cello at 6. Was that your first instrument?
Yeah, I would say like I was playing around on the piano, because my mom, she actually did like a degree in piano solo and solo piano from the Sibelius Academy when she studied, and she became like music teacher later on. That was kind of her calling. So she's been a piano teacher all her life. And so we always had pianos and grand pianos around the house. So I just started sort of banging on those when I was sort of 3 years old or something. And, I was trying to play like the theme for MacGyver or something on the piano. And so that technically that's probably my first instrument, but cello was like the one that I actually sort of started to learn and have lessons with and stuff like that. Like my mom actually owned a cello as well. She always loved that instrument. And then she kind of introduced me to like, would you like to try to play this? So that's how I got into playing cello. Mm.
And so did you feel like you had a natural gift? Did you think, oh, this is what I'm going to do when I grow up? I'm going to, you know, work in this field of music. How did it all develop?
Yeah, I mean, I always thought, like professionally, I thought I would be like a computer programmer, because that was sort of the computers were like my biggest hobby, not just the video games, but just like tinkering with the computers. And I started programming when I was like 12 years old or something. So that was like a natural progression. Like, I think this is going to be, because that was sort of, that's the obvious sort of choice. If you already know that kind of stuff, then it's much easier to get that gig than try to make it as a composer. So I never sort of seriously thought I would be a professional composer, because it was just like, well, it's just a fun thing. It's just another hobby, but I can't, how can you just decide I'm going to be a composer? Like that seems like very, very tall order. And so, but yeah, it's sort of, just comes from the music stuff comes from like a lot of things. It's the kind of runs in the family, and there's a lot of musicians and family, but then also just, you know, again, the computers were useful there because I sort of started finding music programs on the computer.
Yeah. I mean, it really kind of came together because as you grew older, the music composing went from, you know, orchestras and all of that into more of a technical, making music through the technical way and putting together the real instrumentation as well as, right? I mean, all of the, you know.
Yeah, for sure. And it was sort of like, when I initially started doing my own sort of music on the computer, that I was trying to sort of emulate kind of like electronic music artists, because I was listening to like these British electronic bands like The Prodigy and Chemical Brothers and stuff like this. And I tried to do that kind of music, and it didn't really connect with my cello playing. That was just the thing I was doing on the side. Like, I was going to lessons and playing the classical repertoire there, but I never sort of thought about doing that at the time. But it was sort of film music that sort of connected those worlds, because I started listening to, like, in the mid-90s, started listening more carefully to like what Hans Zimmer was doing and stuff like this. And it's like, oh, you can use synthesizers and orchestra in the same place. So maybe my cello and the computer, they're not separate after all. So it kind of started to click at that point.
Interesting. So tell me about your journey, actually. You know, tell me how it started from, you know, you growing up and you decided, you know, did you go to college? Did you go to music school? Tell me how it all happened. And how did you go from, you know, playing your cello and video games into now here you are, you have documentaries on Netflix, you've won all these major awards, and you're barely 15 years old. I just don't understand how that all happened so quickly.
Yeah, it was kind of just that when I, in high school, I just got really, really into film music. I was buying like all the CDs I could find of film scores, and it just, because I'd always had this great interest in film and music, but they were separate. Like, I was already in grade school, I was sort of doing my own like horror movies with friends. I wanted to do, it's like very, very, very crude. Like, I would have like a knife on a tree and some ketchup, and it would be like, but I would sort of compose some horror music for that already. Oh, so wow. I was already sort of doing these things, but I didn't really connect it properly. But then during high school, when I really, really got into film music, I was sort of like, I really want to learn how to do this better. So that's why I applied to Sibelius Academy, which they don't have like a film scoring department, but they had the music technology department, which I thought like that's the closest thing for film music, is that you need that side so much, and that you can sort of study orchestration and stuff like that on the side, and that, so I got in, and that's kind of how started studying those things. And then I started looking for like, where can I actually study film scoring? So then I started looking at universities abroad, and when I came across USC, it was sort of like, oh, now I can actually recognize some names. Like, there was Chris Young, and there was like people I knew already as film composers. So like, I thought like, I want to go there so I can learn from.
Now, was he were they professors that you knew?
No, it's just, I don't know actually what sort of the official term of like how Chris is credited at USC, but I mean, he's obviously a very successful film composer. So it's like, whatever lessons I can get from him, I would just love to do that. So, and we had some really cool classes with Chris, and so it was kind of like exactly what I hoped it would be. So I sort of get that sort of very practical knowledge from somebody who's like deep into the big movies, and there are a lot of other great teachers there. Jack Smalley was amazing, and a whole lot of others. So that was sort of my first. That was actually the first time I worked with an orchestra, because it was so sort of theory based still when I was in Sibelius Academy. I was like studying scores, I was doing orchestrations, but I would just look at them with the orchestration teacher, and he would tell me like, well, that won't sound too good, and I would be like, okay, great, I have no idea. I'm doing, because I'm not hearing the score, I'm just seeing it. So it was actually, USC was like the complete opposite, because I think it was pretty much the first day of class when they told us like, here's a, I think it was a Ravel string quartet, arrange this for full orchestra, we'll record it in 2 weeks, and you're conducting yourself. And obviously, wow. I've never done that, so I just quickly started to learn the patterns and how you move your hand and stuff like that. But it was sort of like, that was, I think that's what I really needed at that point, sort of just get kind of deep into the whole sort of crash course on all things orchestral and just film scoring in general. And so it was very different from the pace before, but it was great. I really enjoyed that year.
Yeah. So it was a year.
Yeah. The USA thing took a year. And then I worked for another year, on LA based projects. But then I sort of just an assistant, but then I got my first feature film, which was by the same director, Domek Karukoski, who did Little Siberia. But he actually directed my first feature in, it came out in 2008, but we worked on it in 2007. So I got contacted by someone from the production company asking if I want to read the script and offer a demo, because they were like looking at a few composers.
Now, were these composers in Finland or were they in America?
I think they were Finnish composers, all of them. So I got some sort of PR boost as well by being in LA. It was like, oh, that's cool. Like he's.
And were you in Finland at the time?
No, I was in LA when I got the script. So I called Dome, arranged a call at a time that worked for both of us with the time zone difference, and just chatted with what he would like for the film. And I remember he said this film is, because I kind of asked this question, which is kind of hard to answer sometimes, but he had a really good answer to the question of what is this movie sort of really about. And he said, he used this Finnish phrase, which basically translates to as through victory, to victory through adversity or something like this. And I just started thinking, what does this sound like? And I had just seen a sci-fi film called Gattaca, which has a Michael Nyman score with this sort of very sort of minimalistic string arrangements and which have this sort of very, very emotional quality. And I felt like that had some of that quality. So I started probably should sort of riff on that feeling somehow. So I started writing a demo based on that sort of just feeling. It doesn't really sound that similar, but it was sort of just a starting point of how I want the music to feel. And then Domek liked that and picked me for that. But that really goes back to when I got into Sibelius Academy. I told the head of department there that I would love to study film scoring specifically. And I was asking, can I get a composition teacher for that? And he said, well, who would you want to have? And I was like, can I have anybody? And I was like, well, you can ask, and if they say yes, we'll sign it on. So I called who was my sort of Finnish film composer hero, Tuomas Kantelinen, who I already knew as someone who had written sort of amazingly beautiful melodies and such big orchestral scores. So I called him up and I said, hey, so can you teach me film music? And he kind of became my mentor. But what he immediately said is go right away to the local film school and just offer to score all of their whatever short films they have, just offer to score all of them for free and sort of just get the experience. And I think that was the most important advice I got, because it's not only did I learn so much just working with all those people, but it was those connections that happened on those short films that led me to get that first feature film.
Is that right?
Yeah, because I think that I heard it told me as there are a couple sound people on the crew of that feature film that knew me from before, and I think they had started talking to Dome hey, we know this composer who's very good at writing under dialogue. This movie had a lot of sort of dialogue and score sort of combination, and that's how I remember it. It's been a while, so my misremember something, but that's basically the story that I think I heard about how they ended up talking to Dome about me, and so yeah, that was, if I hadn't gotten that little advice of go there, and if I had sort of stayed in my sort of lane to studying scores, and it's all really important to do that. But if you don't, sort of nobody's going to come to the music school and pick you out of there if you don't sort of introduce yourself to the world. So that was such an important advice, but also to learn to speak the language of directors, that was also so important. And it's also it's a good way to get out of your head a bit about, at that point you'll have a lot of ideas of, I want to write this kind of film score and this kind of film score. And you kind of impose those on the projects you work on. And it leads to some problems because it's like the project maybe doesn't need your big orchestral moment at the, there's actually, this is kind of, I remember it was like this very sad sort of short film where I think there's like one of the people is like dying of cancer. And there's like, there's a moment where it's like a couple. And I think like the one of them the woman is, I think has already died of cancer at this point. And the man is walking the hospital corridor, like in slow motion and is about to find out. And I did like this really, cause I was like, oh, a sad scene. I get to write like a really big, like lush string arrangement, just make it really, really, really sad. And the director actually started laughing when he saw this, cause I was obviously way, way, way too much. Like when you have that kind of a really serious subject matter and like already a scene that is like soul crushing, you really need to be careful with the music. You almost don't use music at all, but you might use like a single note or just like, but I didn't have that experience. And also I didn't see past my own sort of like wish to just, I want to write that big sort of beautiful, like adagio for strings type like thing. Like, that's really important. Like it's hard. It's a hard lesson. Obviously, if you get laughed when you try to be sad, it's a really tough pill to swallow, but it's so important to get those experiences in early on in school. You don't want that to happen on a professional project.
Yeah, for sure.
It hasn't happened because I sort of learned this like very early, like, oh, you need to be very careful to check if the film is actually calling for what you're trying to write, or if it's something that you just have in your head. Like I think it feels also kind of like you get it out of your system after a while, like after you've gotten to write a couple of big like orchestral film scores, then you don't stop trying to put them in everything because it's like, okay, I got to do that. Now I know I can do the small stuff as well. So.
Well, it's interesting. I think, talking about volunteering your services for all of these student projects, you must have worked with lots of different directors. So learned, and each person must be different to direct with. I know that I only have one experience so far of working with Jeff Kurtenecker, like I talked about. And I know that I had to learn how to talk to a composer, and, you know, he had his own way of working. So you must have had to learn a lot from how to work with different directors. What was that like?
Yeah, that was definitely many different styles of directing at that point. And it's also like when you're when you're working on student films, it's also that the directors are often very, very sort of anxious about everything. And it's sort of this, just everybody is really anxious. So it is like actually some ways much tougher to work on those than it has been to work on professional films, where people are really kind of know how it's going to go. And it's not going to be so it's not that nobody's like freaking out all the time, at least usually. Those are really sort of complicated to navigate in terms of like the dynamics of how you almost need to be sort of a therapist as well as
yeah, composer, yeah, for sure,
cases. So, but yeah, it was just, I didn't sort of really know, I don't know if I can sort of categorize the different directing styles. Obviously there's people who are sort of more, micromanagerial in some ways, and then there are people who are more sort of relaxed about like letting you. But I think it's also like on the student films, everything was sort of very micromanaged. I felt like, and then it was sort of like when you get into feature films, obviously just the length itself means that you cannot sort of micromanage everything. So that it by nature becomes more of your own sort of thing. I think that there were definitely some cases where some people tried to sort of talk a lot about specific instruments, what they'd like to use, and I kind of, that was really useful also for me to sort of learn to, you know, I would never say like, well, I don't want to use that. I'll just say like, oh, cool. So what do you want to what do you want to say with the oboe or whatever? Like I would try to steer the conversation into like,
what do you want to achieve? Like what emotion do you want to evoke?
Yeah. So then we can sort of discuss like, oh, okay, that we can do that with oboe. Hey, but how about, do you want to do actually something else? Like I thought maybe you can do a harp thing or, and it, so it gets the conversation going. So that was also like one thing I learned is to sort of speak the sort of language that steers the conversation towards like what is, how does the drama itself work and what is the film trying to tell say and I think it's really useful to get out of the very specific technical terms. I mean, right. Sometimes there's just a thing that the director really wants and that's fine, but just I usually try to find if I can just somehow understand better where is it coming from, because then I'll be able to also like do things around it that make sense, because it sort of supports the same idea.
Right. Well, and I think it's important to understand, if you know people listening to this that are young directors or are thinking about how to use music, what I learned, truthfully, you don't realize as someone that's appreciating watching movies, how important the score is to your film watching experience, because it undergirds everything and it really carries the emotion of the scene. And so when you are talking with a filmmaker or with a composer, truthfully, I do think it is important to say, this is what I want my audience to feel in this moment. This is what I'm trying to say with what these characters are doing. And you know, I think I would trust you as a composer to know what instrument will create that tension or that, you know, evoke that feeling out of a human, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Because I think that's also why it's, I think when you work with professional directors, they don't really like to use that language of talking about instruments, because they've noticed that they get some sort of surprising results that they didn't think about when they just sort of do more general instructions. So I think that it sort of naturally just goes in that direction. But for sure, it's sort of like, and sometimes I don't even know what I'll use that. I'll go in and think about it, and I'll try to come up with something that surprises even me. But when I sort of like finally get it to work, so it's sort of like it's very good to keep an open mind, I think, and how you do those things, and not sort of start from unless like a really specific reason. But otherwise, it's very nice to experiment. Like, how can you actually do that?
I love to hear you say that. It's the creative process. Like, you don't even know in your mind, you know, you've got this script and nobody's really giving you a lot of direction, but I can just imagine you going in there with your instruments and, you know, you're thinking in your brain with your own emotion, what this character might feel or what this moment might call for. And something may surprise you even as your brain is trying to create something.
Yeah, for sure. It's like, and I think that there's definitely good examples of this, like in my latest Netflix project I did, Little Siberia, because that basically started off as we didn't even have any sort of temp music. Dome, the director, said like he had listened to a lot of things, but on this particular project, he felt like there was nothing that was sort of existing that really fit the film. So we really need to sort of invent the language. And I just started trying out all kinds of,
it is so different, the music in that film. Very, very different. And the way that you used it, it's more of a character in the film, I think.
Yeah, I would say. Yeah.
It's not invisible, let's say. A lot of times music, I think, is invisible and it's meant for you kind of not to notice it. Mm-hmm. I mean, but I feel like this music was meant to be noticed in a way because it clearly is it making you feel, I don't know, it's just more part of the scene. Is that meant to be?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like, because the music is also kind of providing the voice for the meteorite. So we need to make rock a character. So it is sort of like,
okay.
That's how that's.
I got it then.
yes, it is.
It worked. You were a success. That's great. Yeah, it's a very quirky movie. You know, I will say it's challenging because, you know, it is overdubbed. I will tell people. It is on Netflix. All you have to do is Google Little Siberia. It is different. It is a very different kind of movie. But it is, in terms of just the, it is a comedy slash thriller. How would you describe it?
Yeah, I guess we called it like a crime comedy. So it's sort of in that genre.
But there's also a faith element.
Yeah, it's kind of has a very strong drama side to it as well. So it is definitely a mixture of different genres and I've tried to come up with like a single genre for it, but I don't think I can. So I just have to sort of have this multiple list of multiple things.
Yeah. Well, it seems like you must have had fun scoring it because the music is fun, it seems.
Yeah, it was really sort of, it was definitely this kind of experimentation trip. I just started trying to find instruments that worked somehow because we didn't have any sort of specific reference in mind. And I think the first one we landed on, I was playing some like gamelan type percussion loops, which obviously those have nothing to do with like Finnish folk music or anything. But it was
What instrument did you just mention?
Yeah, it's like the gamelan music that's like in Indonesia, so it's like a very different region where that kind of music is played, but they have these sort of metallophone percussion instruments that have really interesting sort of sounds, and for Dome it kind of reminded him of like icicles, and this takes place in obviously in a very cold part of Finland, and that,
yes,
so we wanted something that brings the environment to life as well, and so that's just somehow fit, and so I was like, oh great, now I at least have like a percussion loop, and I need to just start building the rest around this, and I really started thinking like, what can I do out of that, and I sort of tried to kind of just get like the sort of the melody, if you will, and it doesn't really have a melody, but the loop kind of had like a melody, so I was like, I'm gonna try to make this in different instruments, and I kind of just started taking like whatever I could out of that, but it was actually, it was really useful because I started composing very early. Like I think the editor Harri Ylönen, he started editing the film in the spring, because the film came out like at the start of this year. But it was like spring of 2024. Like, so it was kind of quite early when he started editing, and I started writing music because the idea was to also temp. Like the music that was going to be in the edit was going to be all from me, so we wouldn't use any kind of outside temp score because we wanted to really build the sound from scratch, and so I was writing very early, but we kind of did like a very sort of Finnish style summer vacation. Like everybody went away for July, so I was just like, for start of July, we're just like, I'll see you in August, but that was actually amazing because I had worked on the film long enough that I had sort of engaged my subconscious to really work on the film. So it's like week two of my summer vacation when I suddenly like have this realization that, oh, I want this Finnish folk instrument, jouhikko, which is this sort of very sort of rudimentary sort of string instrument, which has this like really interesting sort of raw and earthy sound. And I was like, just came out of nowhere. I hadn't even thought about the film, but I was suddenly like, I need to do that. And I started listening to some jouhikko music. And
you have one of those lying around?
No, I called a curl friend who was a great player on that. So I didn't write on the instrument, but I wrote a melody for it just with a sample that was sort of in that direction. It's a kind of similar instrument. I used the sample to write the melody. Like the first day I came back from vacation, I was like that, and that became the main theme because I had been the whole beginning period from the spring to July. I've sort of, we were doing all kinds of demos. I think I'd written like over maybe 1.5 hours of music already, all kinds of tests. And I still didn't have like a main theme. I was like, I don't know. This is really a tough one to find a main theme for this film. And it's sort of like the first day coming back from vacation because my sort of subconscious had solved the problem for me. And I just wrote it out and I played the domain like, oh, that's it. Let's go with that. And so, but so it's really, it really, for me, it really showed the importance of like developing ideas early, because I really love it when you're sort of, your brain starts to work for you even when you don't even notice it. So it, yeah, it really feels like the music is sort of flowing out of you more easily at that point.
That's really great. Now, did you read the script and that's when you started, or did you see the footage and that's when you started?
I did read the script. That was actually in summer of 23. So that was even before they were shooting the film. So we kind of had a first meeting with Dome, and they were still sort of thinking, I think, whether you're probably the only composer we're talking to, which kind of is stressful. Like, oh, can I really screw this up? No. I had to write the script, and it really felt, I called the movie like a North Karelian Magnolia, because it really felt like it, you have this similar sense that there's like some kind of metaphysical level in how these things are somehow, there's random things that happen and they're somehow connected, but it just happens to happen in Eastern Finland. And he really liked that idea that I sort of saw the sort of metaphysical level in that. So that was always also part of the score then, is to try to build that sort of that other level in the music that's not immediately obvious in sort of the scene by scene thing. And that was also something we often discussed, is like, if I wrote something that was too much about the action, like I think the original main title I wrote was still a different edit. I think they think now he's driving to this small town, but initially I think he was driving to the doctor during the main title. So the music that I wrote originally was sort of more actiony, and you're just trying to get to the doctor, like, and Dome just said like, yeah, I can see you're playing that, but how about, what's the bigger picture, like what is the movie really about, like, and was like, yeah, I'll do one more like that, and then we can settle on this very different sort of main title sequence as well. I'm trying to think what was your original question? Because I guess I sidetracked.
No, that's totally fine. Sidetracks are awesome. I asked you if you had seen the script or if you had seen the film, and I asked you at what point you began composing, really. That's the question.
Yeah, okay. So I think we sort of were toying with ideas based on the script as well, but because it was so early, I didn't do much at that point. It was sort of when in the spring of 24, when they started sort of having some dailies and stuff, like I could actually watch to get some kind of idea of what's happening. And then Harry, the editor, started like putting some sequences together. That felt like the natural point to really start sort of progressing the music a lot. So we definitely had discussions about the instrumentation and other stuff like that. But we kind of waited until I had something to look at. You know, sometimes it's nice to start with even the script, like the music that I, the first feature that I did that Dome also directed in 2007, the music that I wrote for that based on the script, that's still in the film. So sometimes it works, but I think very often what happens if you do music based on a script, it might just be sort of wrong, because there's so many things you're still taking based on interpretation. But I do like to start early and sometimes even write based on the script, because it's sort of like that's time you can spend on sort of coming up with ideas that you can use in so many different ways, and you'll always usually find, if it's a good idea, you can adapt it to whatever the film calls for. You just change the context completely, right, and it suddenly works. So I think I've become more of a fan of actually starting really early and just building this kind of this bank of ideas that you can draw from, because it's really nice to, when you're in the middle of a scene and you're suddenly like, oh, I don't actually have like a motif or a melody for this thing and I need it. Then you go look at all the things you hadn't used yet and you're like, oh, that actually fits. And then you have actually an idea that is sort of thought through, instead of trying to come up with something on the spot, which sometimes it works, but it's kind of, it's more chaotic. And sometimes it's just, it doesn't end up very good. And then you don't have time to do multiple passes at it because you might be late into the project. And then you kind of just have to go with that. So I really like to build like a big bank of melodies and motifs and just sound, maybe just different sounds. If it's that kind of score, it doesn't have to be melodic score, but just whatever. And then I can sort of draw from those.
I like working that way too. I worked that way with Jeff, and I like not working with a temp score. So we did the same thing with Jeff. We asked Jeff to give us music from the very beginning and kind of develop a theme. And then we started editing with his music, and he actually ended up liking it. I couldn't believe it, but it was a great way to work. Now we have about 10 minutes left. There are so many questions I have left for you. So I'm going to just like fire questions to you this time, and you got to give me short answers. So what I want to know is, when did Netflix pick up this film, and what was that like? But you got to be short.
Yeah, I mean, this is originally a Netflix project already. So we know from the get-go. So it was something just Netflix sort of commissioned.
Okay. So it was they bought it based on the script.
Yeah, I think they basically, yeah, that's right.
Oh, wow, that's amazing. So what did it feel like to know that you were scoring a film that was a Netflix original? Like, were you so excited?
Yeah, I mean, that was really cool because that it's going everywhere now. So it's very, very different. Like, even though Finnish films usually don't go much outside Finland. So that was really cool.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on that. Now let's talk a little bit about your documentaries. You told me just recently you've had some new interactions with them. So talk about them real quickly.
Yeah, those have been sort of really important part of my career, and Tale of the Sleeping Giants is still doing like rounds as a live concert. I was just yesterday at the rehearsal for Jyväskylä Symphony. I actually played today a concert of the documentary, so live to picture. So that's been a great pleasure and honor to just hear orchestras perform those live but yeah, those have really sort of been sort of really important moments. But it's been a while. Tale of a Forest came out in 2012.
It's still going.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Tale of the Sleeping Giants is 2022 or 21. It was kind of during COVID. So the years are kind of a mess. Like, we finished the movie already in 2020, but it was kind of waiting for a release. Maybe it came out partly in 21. But yeah. So we've been doing those for 10 years, and they're still shooting one more. So I think coming out in Christmas 26, so we'll have one more of Tale series.
So no, I didn't. I get a chance to watch these. Are they nature documentaries?
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
Okay. Fantastic. And where can we watch those?
I don't know if those are sort of available everywhere, but I think if you look at on streaming services or Apple or something, I think some countries you'll definitely have those. So I hope they're available in whatever.
Okay. Now, before we go, do you have any advice for aspiring composers, composers who want to work in the documentary film world or feature film world? You're very young, if you don't mind me saying, having been as successful, I think, as you have been and done as much as you have done. So what advice do you have for young filmmakers who want to be just like you?
Well, I think I'll pass on the advice I got from mentors is go and find sort of projects to score, like whatever scores that the projects that help you so learn to talk to directors and work with directors and also get your music out there. I think that's absolutely the most important skill, and just like that's the way to find more work is when you work for sort of speaks for yourself, and also people get to know you and sort of trust you as a collaborator. So I think if I had to say one piece of advice, that's it for sure.
That's awesome. All right. We always have a special segment of Documentary First. This segment is called DocuView Deja Vu. And in this segment, we ask our guests for their favorite documentary. And I wonder if that has a favorite score in that documentary. Probably so. So did you bring one to share with us?
Yeah, I think it's hard to pick a favorite, but I would pick the movie Oceans, because the Bruno Coulet score in that was really influential for the Tale of series of venture films. That I think that when we were working on the first one, the director asked me to sort of watch that as one reference, and it really made a big impression to me how the music was sort of very, very sort of cinematic and also very sort of expressive, and it was just sort of like the kind of style that I really adopted for my own work with the nature stuff. So I that's why I picked the oceans.
Okay, it's a good one. All right, now do you have any other projects you want to tell us about that you're working on or that you are able to tell us about?
I guess it's the stuff that I'm working on right now is kind of hard to say they usually don't want me to talk about that before the hour. But I think I mentioned what I said already is that they're doing a new tale of a movie. So there is going to be a new nature film next year. So with that kind of score. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Okay. Do you ever play live? Do you ever have your music play live or compose it live, like direct an orchestra live?
Well, I don't conduct it myself with the concerts, but yeah, the nature films we're all being played live to picture with an orchestra. So they're
probably usually in Finland.
Yeah. Well, we're actually looking at having concerts abroad for Tale of the Sleeping Giants right now. So I don't have any places to announce yet, but we're definitely looking at getting some concerts abroad as well.
Now, I'm sure people could probably find out or follow you by going somewhere. Can people find out more information? Where would they go?
Yeah, I think my homepage, panualtio.com, that's the best way to start. And I'll try to keep that updated. I think I still need to add a little Siberius. I need to go add that really quick.
And we will put that in our show notes, as well as the other things that we've talked about that you have worked on. It really has been a pleasure speaking with you. And I could talk to you for so much more time. I wish we did have a few more hours. We could talk to you about all the other things that you have worked on. You're fascinating and clearly a talented individual. And so thank you for sharing your time with us today.
Thanks. It's been great talking to you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to Documentary First, where we believe everybody has a story to tell and you can be the one to tell it. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Documentary First. We really appreciate your partnership with us. We can't do any of this without you. So thank you for listening, donating, and following along on our journey. We are supported by generous donations from people just like you. To make a donation, visit thegirlwhowarefreedom.com or support us on Patreon at patreon.com/documentaryfirst. To learn more about our other works in progress, visit documentaryfirst.com or follow Documentary First on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. This podcast was produced by Documentary First, edited and mixed by Jason Hoban, with music by Jeff Kurtenacker.